Hello and welcome to SEO 101 on WMR.fm, episode number 479. This is Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my co-host is my company's senior SEO, Scott Van Ack. Well, we're going to jump right into SEO news today. We've got a bit of a timeline crunch, but lots to share. This particular one is, well, dovetails into something we talked about before. It's fairly of interest here. Google Search is going to label images as AI-generated, edited, or taken with camera. Well, you wrote about this, so fill us in.
Yeah, so as Ross mentioned, yeah, we'll get those labels starting to appear soon in Google Search. When you search for anything and you see an image and you click on that image for the about this image information that Google will show or does show now, they will start adding those labels. Interesting thing about this is that, so they'll be using the Coalition for Content Provenance and Authenticity, C2PA technology for this. So that's a mouthful. I barely got through it myself. So currently C2PA is backed by Google, Amazon, Microsoft, OpenAI, and Adobe. But according to TechCrunch, the coalition standards are not really widespread at the moment. And it's also important to note that C2PA metadata, which is what they're basing some of this on, can be removed or scrubbed. So people creating AI images don't have to say that it's AI in the metadata, and then Google won't be able to use this to identify that. Likewise, many of the generative AI tools like Flux and Grok, and why are AI tools named so stupid? Let's just throw some random continents in there and see what consonants in there and see what happens. So some of the tools don't even add that metadata to them. So how effective this will be, I mean, initially, I don't think it's going to be great. I think it's better than nothing. I think it's a good start. And hopefully, long term, it will expand into having everything labeled as AI and be able to actually detect that it's all AI. But don't expect, you know, if you're fact checking something and you want to make sure it's not AI, that, Google doesn't say it is, so it must not be, because that it's going to be wrong. Google did also state, though, that they are exploring ways to use this at YouTube as well. So maybe we'll start seeing YouTube labels or labels in YouTube telling us what's AI and what isn't. But good start, but
I can see that coming for sure. But computationally intensive, I'd say, to put it mildly. So it'll be a rollout that's going to take a long time.
Totally.
Now, we discussed this, I don't know which, quite a few shows ago, and how this can cause problems, because even if a photographer edits out a blemish on a page, if they use any AI to make it cleaner, the blemish, you know, and speed up, frankly, it speeds things up, it's automatically noted as being AI generated, which is bad news. That's not cool. So there's going to be lots of problems that way. And the way to scrub it right now is simply to, if you, and I say this as a photographer who doesn't want this to be, I don't want to be labeled in this, in this regard, is you can save it as a bitmap, so export as bitmap, and then in another program, then save it as, open it up again, and then save it as a different file format, and it'll be removed. At this stage, that's one way to do it.
I would say if resolution isn't a super critical part, you could screenshot it and clip the screenshot. There's so many ways to get around it, really.
Yeah.
But it keeps the honest people honest, though.
Yeah. And then, you know, in the social networks, that should be pretty good. They don't need to be huge sizes, right? But if you're going to post it anywhere that's massive, then, man, those bitmaps will be...
Could you imagine switching everything to a bitmap? Like the least compressed image format.
I've got like 40 megabyte TIFF images. If I had to save that as a bitmap, it'd be like 200 megs probably. I can't even imagine.
You should have that as your hero image on the homepage then.
Oh, dear. Okay. Google's Martin Split says, we do not use EXIF data for ranking. This is something I've looked into before.
So let's
talk about this. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, Google apparently has been a bit wishy-washy on whether or not they use it. And back in 2014, Matt Cutts had said that Google can parse EXIF data and it reserves the right to use it. But no one's ever confirmed that they do. And now Martin Split, as of, not sure what date, but like this month, 2020, in 2024, 24 September, says it is not used for ranking. So if you were wondering about it, there you go. It's kind of a non-issue. Don't worry about it. If you don't know what EXIF data is, in the show notes, I'll include a link to Wikipedia. You can do it yourself as well. But it's essentially metadata that's sort of behind the scenes of an image. Wikipedia actually has a good little chart where they show the tags and the types of values. So like for cameras, it might be the manufacturer, the model, the orientation, the exposures, all the photo data. It's not like it has big textual written descriptions that you could really spam. So
the good news about EXIF data, though, and I do wish they would use this aspect, is copyrights put in there if it's properly done. I do that for all mine now. You, of course, have sometimes you have geolocation data for where the photo was taken, which would be very helpful for Google. Lots of really interesting things, actually. And I'd be surprised if they don't use it in some regards for certain things. But for rankings, I don't see why it would. Yeah. But I would definitely say it's not being ignored for other
You would think that they would definitely use the geo data, like for Google Maps and there's a million ways they could use that without being sneaky or evil.
Yeah, and if using image recognition, they could generally tell from other ones and from taken from that area whether or not that photo is from there.
Yeah.
And what I guess the question is, what how would that be worth their while? And I guess if it's increasing the amount of images they have for a particular really important event, then I guess it would be helpful. But otherwise, it might be, their data, their power could be used better elsewhere. Properly. All right. Google Search Console, the product snippets are reporting a bug. Fill us in on this. I'm about to talk about a whole bunch of stuff in AI, so I'm letting
Mike, Scott,
talk about this.
Oh, my God. I've known you 20 years, and now you've forgotten my name.
Yeah.
I'm going to cry. Yeah, so another bug in Google Search Console. And so what we're seeing right now is this was actually reported to Barry by Chloe Smith on X. And she had said, has anyone else seen a weird increase in product snippet search appearance, clicks, and impressions in Google Search Console? I can see this for several clients on pages where products are not present and where no schema is implemented, and I'm baffled. So first, I want to say something that's really exciting for me right now. We report on a lot of bugs and things, and we can never see them. I can see this bug. Ooh. I confirmed it with my own eyes on our own client's search consoles. I've never been able to do that because the bugs were impervious to bugs until now. So what I'm seeing is, and this is for client sites who don't even have products. I think they're just like, there are no products on the sites, but yet if you look in Google Search Console under performance and you select product snippets under advanced, we're seeing for the last 2 or 3 weeks impressions and clicks for products, but there are none. So that doesn't make any sense. So it sounds like it's definitely a bug. If it's not a bug, I'm even more confused. And I guess we'll find out about that soon if it isn't, but I expect it'll be fixed soon. But the whole point is for data for the last 3 weeks, you can, you know, look at it with a grain of salt. If you start seeing these weird product snippet things, if you have products, you might be seeing more than you're actually getting. Who knows? But the data is corrupt in some fashion. So,
all right, good to know, and nice that we can actually see it. I guess
so exciting.
All right, before I jump into my discussion on AI, I wanted to take a quick break. So we'll be right back.
SEO 101 will be back right after recess.
Welcome back to SEO 101 on WMR.FM, hosted by myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company's senior SEO, Scott Fanak. All right, so my friend Kevin Indig has posted another awesome article, in this case on Search Engine Journal. He has his other product called Growth Memo, where he gets into even greater detail on some of the stuff, but this is a really interesting and well share worthy document here. So it's about AI overviews. He's using Surfer SEO. He's managed to analyze 546,000 AI overviews. And this has revealed that optimizing for AI overviews heavily relies on understanding user intent rather than matching exact search queries. That's kind of a key takeaway here. But let's dig into some of this. First of all, what is the significance of AI overviews? AI overviews are recognized as one of the most transformative changes in SEO, at least since the introduction of mobile. The data set they looked at had 546,000 rows and 44.4 gigs of data, which covers over 12 million domains. Not bad. So we're looking at some pretty hefty information here that seems valid. It's not like they did a small segment of 20,000 pages. This is some significance.
It's so much better. A lot of these studies we look at are 1,000 searches or 1,000 keywords. This is big.
This actually provides some value, and I really appreciate Kevin doing this and sharing it. So in terms of finding visibility, about 85% of queries were in English, with many results being in Google's Search Generative Experience section. Now, anything in SGE is in the sandbox of testing. There's SGE, the Search Generative Experience, which is a place you go to see what Google's testing in the AI realm. And then there's the general search results we see every day that is separate from that. And that is also where we're seeing AI overviews, but a more stabilized version, technically. We're going to call them AIOs for now, AI overviews, but AIOs can significantly reduce website traffic by as much as 10%, he found, depending on design and user intent. That's significant. So if these are taking up space on the page, the first thing people are seeing, and that information doesn't have a citation pointing to your website, there's a significant drop there in terms of business. And he can tell that through looking at different, I assume, from looking at different clients he's worked with and seeing how much things have dropped since AI overviews has appeared in some of their top ranking phrases. Citation patterns. The most cited domains within AIOs have shifted. YouTube and Wikipedia remain prominent, while social sites like Reddit and Quora show low citation visibility. This was really surprising to me. Reddit, Quora, they were up in the top there because, well, frankly, they're kind of satisfying. I have to admit, I find the results satisfying. I look at them and go to them and I see people answering. And you can tell from that what their authority is.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Generally, you can look at their past chats, you can look at their profile, you get a sense of whether or not they're talking out their ass or they know what they're talking about. And it's really useful. And you can also see people's responses, who will call them out if they're not doing, saying something correctly. Anyways, the fact that those aren't showing up as much is interesting. Citation necessity. Not all AIOs include citations. Approximately 0.85% of queries show no citations. This is particularly the case for simple queries. So if you have something like what is the capital of Saskatchewan? Well, that's pretty simple. There's no reason really to have citations there. That's likely, if it's even showing in AI overview, it's likely not to have any citations. It might have one pointing to the Saskatoon's homepage or something, but the capital. Organic position influence. And this is interesting. This is one of the main questions he had. He says there's a high overlap between citations in AIOs and pages that rank well in traditional search results. But rankings do not solely dictate AIO visibility. So he's clearly noted that if you're ranking below that AI overview, that doesn't mean you're going to be in there necessarily. In fact, they seem to be mixing things up a bit. Only 6% of AIOs explicitly contain the search query, meaning that user needs is critical for content optimization. And we're going to get back into that in a bit. That's intent. Search generative experience variability. So how does this differ from there? I'm going to screw this up. It seems a lot. I'm just going to go with AI overviews. Content can differ significantly between live results and search generative experience, indicating potential future changes. So he's seen pretty vast and looking at the data. I'm not going to get into all that. This is a long article, but it showed pretty significant percentage changes. I believe it was 60% or so different.
Wow.
On SGE. So there's some fundamental stuff they're doing right now. Nothing of what we're seeing, I think this sort of translates into nothing what we're seeing right now is how things are going to be in the future. It's just the now. In terms of challenges ahead, the landscape suggests an increased emphasis on user intent and adaptations in content strategy alongside potential imbalances in search visibility. This is a sort of consolidation of his notes at the end there. Now, a bit more on user intent. A lot of people don't understand it, and it's a bit airy-fairy, but it is very important. So first of all, user intent or search intent is the goal behind users' searches on platforms like Google. Addressing user intent is essential for ranking well, becoming more significant than backlinks and content quality. Now, Google's algorithms, including Hummingbird and RankBrain, have evolved to interpret semantic meaning of queries. This is what brings together the knowledge graph, the underpinning of Google. So understanding how different content relates to other content is the key for Google to understand how the world is put together, how everything interconnects. And they use that to not necessarily need keyword phrase recognition for searches. I mean, they understand it, but exact phrase match in results isn't going to be as high. And that's what's happening here in AI overviews. They genuinely understand what's trying to be said. So they don't need phrase match within the result. It's them actually explaining the answer and providing citations from where it's from. User intent categories include informational, navigational, and transactional types. I believe we touched on this a bit in our training, the 6-part series. Do you remember, Scott, whether or not we did? I think we did.
I think we did. I'm pretty sure we did, yes.
So you can check that out. Anyway, those are three different types of searches in terms of intent. If you want to see that in action, try SEMrush. It's got a cool tool that will show you, or estimate anyways, what type of intent is in different searches. It's quite helpful. The challenge here, though, is that user intent changes over time. There's keyword ambiguity, and there's a volume of keywords, too. I mean, is it really worth targeting something that's fairly poorly searched, even though it is relevant? And it might actually devalue over time as people lose interest in it. Anyways, optimizing for user intent involves analyzing the search engine result pages and adjusting your content to meet user expectations. Okay, so watch things, be on the pulse, get a nice idea of what's happening on a regular basis, and just bend to it. Make sure that your content is on the pulse. I don't know how else to put it. I actually have a really bad case of lacking words today. So anyways, there we go, which is perfect for explaining something like this.
I love it. Yeah.
Oh, dear God. Okay. Well, anyways, I hope that was helpful. It's always interesting to see what kind of research is being done on AI, and it just helps inform our expectations of what's to come. And I loved, probably one of my biggest takeaways, or two of them, was the intent part, which isn't at all a surprise, because we know that that's going to be the future of everything Google. Intent is everything. The more they understand everything, they're not going to need to, they're going to try to get around optimization as optimizers by ensuring that they just really understand everything and they can't be faked out by these bad actors who are using black hat SEO. That doesn't mean we can't optimize still. We definitely can. It's just that they're going to do a better job of just destroying the ones getting past the people who are doing the bad stuff.
Essentially, it's just making quality content more and more and more important.
Yeah. And the other takeaway for me was I loved seeing that there was such a huge variability between SGE and what we see today on regular search results. Again, it's a no-brainer. I mean, you're looking at this and knowing that there's a lot of things happening. AI is being tested galore. There's tons of changes coming. But the fact that they were so different shows that we really have a lot of interesting things to come our way. All right, so let's jump into the Mueller files. What have you got here, Scott?
Yeah, so Google is saying some simple factors aren't ranking signals. So this is actually kind of interesting because, well, I'll tell you when I get to them, I guess. So John Mueller has affirmed in a LinkedIn post about two specific site characteristics that are not ranking factors: typos and valid HTML. So his post was inspired by an analysis of 200 homepages of the most popular websites. I don't know which sites they were, but they were the most popular, clearly, and found out that only 0.5% or one single homepage had valid HTML on it. He said, this is, in my opinion, a pretty low bar. It's a bit like saying professional writers produce content free of typos. That seems reasonable, right? Google also doesn't use typos as a ranking factor. But imagine you ship multiple typos on your homepage. Ew. His words, not mine, the ew. And he says it's also trivial to validate your HTML and to monitor the validity of important pages like your homepage. So essentially, you know, what, you know, any spammer that's trying to spam and rank, it would be a really easy thing to try to play with. And, you know, even in our case, when we do audits, we used to check W3C's tool and check to make sure a page had valid HTML. And if it didn't, that would be something to correct. I almost never check that now.
Yeah, it's not worth it anymore.
No, there are some situations, like if a site, if we're trying to troubleshoot something, or I don't know, various circumstances come up where I'll check it and see if it's like blatantly bad, because there's valid HTML, or sorry, there's invalid HTML, and then there's full on broken HTML. Yeah. So sometimes you can find signals of what might be broken when you do those tests, but I don't care if a site is valid anymore. Typos I care about, but not so much for SEO. Just, you don't want typos on your page. It turns off your customers, right? So you definitely want those fixed. I'm not surprised that Google ignores the typos, but I would have thought, and maybe this is true, I don't know, that if you have a site that's riddled with typos and just tons of them, I think it should affect your quality scores and it should bring you down a little bit if it's that bad, but I don't know that that's the case. So all that said, just a couple quick notes on valid HTML. Even though it's not necessarily going to impact your SEO, you might still want it to be valid, maybe because you know, it can help your site to load a bit faster in some situations. Your site may use a little bit less bandwidth, and it may help you with cross-browser compatibility. So if your site is not working on Edge, well, one person won't see it. But no, if it's not working from one browser or the next, you know, check your HTML and see if it's invalid, because that could be an indicator as to why that might be happening. It's a place to fix. So,
yeah, I 100% agree. And I think that, yeah, if you're using an established platform, like say WordPress, Squarespace or anything like this, they have systems in place that provide a certain level of quality. Now, I know a couple of people in the industry who absolutely rail, lose their minds over how bad the actual code is in these systems, and they will not stop until they're 100% valid HTML on every site they work on. I don't have the energy for
No.
that. And maybe they see an impact on something, maybe rankings, but I can't even imagine it's even close to worth all the effort. Just make sure things do work compatibly across different browsers and devices, and you're set.
Yeah.
It comes down to really your message, your quality of content, all the things we've covered before. Again, another great one, a great answer from John Mueller. I always appreciate his stuff, and it's a good way to tie up a little bit shorter show than usual, but we appreciate your time. So on behalf of myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Step Forth Web Marketing, and my company's senior SEO, Scott Van Ack, thank you for joining us today. Remember, we do have a show notes newsletter you can sign up for at SEO101radio.com, where we have all the links to what we've been discussing and some more concise notes than my lack of word day. Garbage. I don't know. I can't speak. It's like I need sleep or something. Anyway, have a great week, and remember to tune into future episodes, which air every week on WMR.fm.
Great. Thank you for listening, everybody.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.